author Claire Dieterer thinks Mother's Day feels kind of obligatory, and motherhood is already obligatory enough. She wrote a bestseller about raising a child in North Seattle and all of the rules and anxieties that came with that.
Rules about wearing your baby, and rules about sleeping with your baby, and only feeding them organic food, and only having wooden toys, and you can't recarpet the playroom because it'll off-gas, that kind of thing.
Claire Dieterer says all those rules and obligations come with a cost. In her new book, Love and Trouble, she writes about her midlife despair.
I do think there's a way in which my intense commitment to a certain quality and kind of motherhood and a certain ideal of marriage and a certain level of ambition as a worker, all these things, that's a lot of stuff to kind of keep in the air. I do think that that maybe led me to this place where I was more fragile after I turned about 44. So I just felt tired. And I talk in the book, in my new book, Love and Trouble, I talk about maybe a woman's version of midlife crisis is stopping doing stuff. You know, I was so intensely involved in every aspect of motherhood and homemaking and working. It was just sort of like, I just can't do anymore. And I just wanted to sort of take to my bed, which is ridiculous, but that's what happened. And I feel like now that I'm writing about it and talking about it with other women, there is also this quality of like, huh, it's kind of interesting. Other people feel this way too. Like, do you see this dynamic at all in your own marriage?
Yeah, without, you know, my wife didn't choose to be a radio host or a revealing author, so I'm a little cautious, yeah. But she works and she's ambitious and tired. Yeah.
So how does that feel to you?
Well, when you talk about taking to your bed and doing less, like, I think I'm guessing I speak for some husbands when I say, we're more okay with that. We do less. We know doing less, right?
Yes.
And I want to say, go ahead, honey. Do less.
I would definitely say you're speaking for one husband, which would be my husband.
Yeah, tell me about that.
Yeah, I think he's just like, you know, it's an issue of standards. Your standards are too high. Why are you trying to do things this one certain way? Why won't you let me do it my way? You know, which may not be quite such a pristine way. And somebody, I can't remember who, recently did an article about like, if we'd all just let our houses be messier, we'd have better marriages.
Yeah.
And I think that the kind of marriage that I have is one where we entered together as partners into this marriage. You know, we got married in 1997 and we saw ourselves as, we were both writers at the time and we were going to build a life as writers and parents and workers and be partners in that. But then there are like pressures that are true economic pressures where my husband can earn more. And where I was, for instance, nursing, so I need to be with the babies more. And so there's these external pressures that start to bear on you. And what you had thought was going to be a series of choices and expression of partnership becomes almost like walking down this predetermined trail. And you're like, how did I end up on the same trail I was trying to examine and be more careful about and be a partner on? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Why do you think you named a couple of things, a pay disparity and the biological fact of nursing.
Yeah.
Is that it? Like, is there more going on that you think this is such a hetero male female generalization that women end up exhausted?
I do think women have a different standard than men. And I do think there's, I don't want to speak for everyone, but in my marriage, I feel like my husband really wants to do a great job and really wants to meet me, you know, 50-50. And when he gives it his all, we get to about 70-30.
And, at best.
Yeah. And I mean, there's things I don't do that he does. But I do think that there is some kind of gap in the way we're raising boys, or that boys have been raised, where they don't necessarily expect to step in and do 50 or 60 or 70% themselves.
I heard a theory, feel free to destroy this, years ago, I don't remember who, some man explaining that he thought that women had a biological imperative to care more about stuff because if they didn't get stuff right, the infant would die. So they were wired to care more than men.
I am really uncomfortable talking about biological imperatives, and I won't do it.
Okay.
But I do think that let's flip it around and focus on not what women want or what women should do, but focus instead on the idea that taking care of our stuff and our houses and our cooking and the stuff we live in the midst of is good for us. It makes us more human, more humble, more connected to the rhythm of daily life. It's something we should all be doing. You know, that's not just a construct to try to get my husband to do the dishes more. I think it is something that I would want for my son. When women are doing all the domestic work, they miss out on the opportunity to make money or lie in bed and stare at the dust motes or whatever it is that they want to do. But men also are limited in being full humans that they could be if they're not completely participating.
So what did you do with being exhausted and confined?
Well, what happened to me was I became very antsy, very chafy about the captivity piece of it. Mm-hmm. And so I found myself yearning to do bad behaviors. So yearning to
define bad.
Yes. Well, like wanting to just drink a lot, having sort of inappropriate friendships with men. I got kissed a couple times, like things that don't happen to Finney Ridge moms, right? That's not in the rule book. Uh-huh. And those things started to happen to me, or I started to seek them out. And, you know, independence, having a life outside the marriage, an emotional life outside the marriage, because I was feeling so confined. And I wouldn't say it was a positive experience, but it did define some issues for me. You know, like I realized like, oh, I do feel really constrained by marriage. And I think that a lot of us do. And also that kind of yearning for something more, something different, really connected me to the girl I had been when I was growing up in Seattle in the 1980s.
Which was kind of wild.
Yeah, I was kind of a wild kid, and I was definitely a kid who liked to get in trouble a lot. And I had thought I'd sort of gotten over all that when I was being the good mom and the good worker and the good wife. And then that feeling, that troubled person, kind of came roaring back in my mid-40s, and there she was again. It was like, you know, me now and younger me were sort of saluting each other across the years, and it was sort of appalling, and yet it happened.
And you were reading diaries about that Claire, that little Claire, mm-hmm. and you were having some possibly bad behavior, depending on what's bad.
Mm, good point.
And what did that lead to?
You know, nothing. And I think that for me as a writer, that's what I'm interested in talking about. You know, a lot of memoir like Wild or Eat, Pray, Love is about escaping and going off and finding something different, following a dream or trying to find yourself. But most of us don't do that. We stay. And that's always what I'm interested in writing about. What about the people who stay? You have this sort of wild blossoming of yearning in your mid-40s. Well, okay, sure, go walk the Appalachian Trail or whatever it is, or have an affair and run off to Thailand or whatever. Most of us stay. And that's what I try to talk about in the book, both my experience now, but also my reckoning, as I say in my title, with the girl I was. You know, looking back on her was really painful at first. I went and I found all my diaries and my letters and my photos, and I would just, oh my God. I mean, imagine looking at your teenage diaries. It's horrific.
Your sound more interesting.
Like
mine.
They're very badly written. Hmm. But I think that I loathed her so much. I had so much self-loathing about that kid I had been. And a lot of the book deals with me learning to see her more clearly and approach her with more compassion. So I'm really thinking a lot about how we don't change. You know, memoirs are almost always these books about transformation.
Yeah.
I got better. And this book says, what if we don't really change? What if we just come to terms with who we are?
Yeah. How do you get through a midlife crisis that's brought on by following all the rules and staying, and then you still stay? So what did you do with all that? You know, wanderlust and everything.
There's a lot of small rebellions, you know, leaving town with friends or intellectual rebellions, you know, like working on writing this book and working on thinking about these things. But I didn't do anything with it. I'm still married. I'm still, you know, taking care of my kids. I think I endured it.
And then it passed?
Well, I don't know. I feel a little better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, not the most enthralling ending.
How does your husband feel about all this? By the way, he's not that anonymous a guy.
No.
He's a writer. I know him a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
What is your marriage now that it wasn't? Is it the same thing it always was?
Well, when I was going through all this, I started thinking about, isn't there some different way to be married? You know, is there some other way to be married? Somewhere between feeling completely trapped and this kind of idea that we're going to have an open marriage and be polyamorous and, you know, which I guess is an up and coming thing with the millennials. I don't know. I've been hearing about this.
Hmm.
So what's in between?
Yeah.
And I realized as kind of the years went on that we were sort of inventing it without even realizing it. You know, he travels all the time for work. He's an environmental journalist. And then I began to travel a lot more for work. So we supported each other in these sort of forays into the world and accepted it, that that was going to be part of our lives. Or if I want to go look at 12 art shows in LA with my best friend over the weekend, that's a priority that's important, right? So we just built it in this sort of in-between way.
And it's really 50-50 okay? Because usually one person is more into a marital change than the other person.
Well, I think it's interesting because I think that it already existed. I think I was the domestic person and my husband traveled for work all the time as an adventure journalist does. And so I think that when I wanted to start exploring the boundaries of our marriage a little bit more, I mean, could he say no?
He stayed.
Yeah, he stayed. Lucky me.
Yeah, I'm happy to hear that. Is this just your story, Claire, or is there something you wish for your readers and right now your listeners?
I feel like this is a story about coming to terms with, this is going to sound super pretentious, but it is a story about coming to terms with one's own mortality. Hmm. You know, I think you come into your mid-40s and you start to realize, like, you know, is this really my whole life? And I feel like that story has been told over and over and over by men. When women write this, first of all, it happens very rarely. And second of all, it always gets called menopause. It becomes a biological story. And for me, this idea that there could be midlife despair that is basically a universal human experience of like, oh, crap, I'm coming to the end. I felt like it was really important to talk about that from a female point of view and to let women who are going through that know it's happening to other women. You know, the book is written as like a, you know, I wanted to take it as a football and throw it back at my younger self from when I was like 45, when I was really feeling sad. Just to say, there's a lot of people experiencing this. Because as I started to talk to other women and describe what I was experiencing, they would just look at me with these like loony, vacant, hungry eyes like, yes, me too. So I'm trying to connect with them and say, we're having a universal experience and we'll get through it.
Claire Dieterer, the new book is Love and Trouble, just out. And it's just so great to talk with you about this. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.